Hi, welcome back to Story Hodge, a podcast that celebrates the personal stories of friends and family as I travel around North America seeking a place to sleep. I'm your host, Jennifer. If you're listening for the first time and are wondering about the word Hajj, it simply means pilgrimage in Arabic. I chose the word after spending 26 months working as a humanitarian in Iraq, where pilgrims flood to the Shia shrines of Imam Hussein and Imam Ali, as well as others. In less turbulent times, Christian pilgrims also came to Iraq to visit the tombs of the prophets Jonah and Nahum, the ancient city of Babylon, and many other historic sites. Since I've been on break, this four-month-long road trip has become my own pilgrimage, a journey of connection. Today I'm doing something a little different. Instead of an in-person interview, I'm sharing a pre-recorded Skype conversation with a friend and colleague who is currently living in Baghdad. I have chosen not to mention my friend's name, and so you may hear some gaps in the conversation where I have deleted it. I wanted to do this podcast as a response to the recent bombing which killed 292 people last Sunday morning, July 3rd. In the U.S., we have seen very little media attention given to this tragedy, and even less was given to it on social media. Facebook was slow to put in place a safety check. There was no option to change your profile picture in support of the country, as done in similar incidents in Paris, Brussels, or Istanbul. And so I wanted to offer this small platform to a voice from Iraq, a voice I respect and trust. I invite you to listen now to my friend who calls Baghdad home. Here's the call. Hello?
Hello there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How about you, Jennifer?
I'm doing great. It's so good to hear your voice.
It's so good to hear your voice, too.
Thanks for being on the podcast today. It really means, so much to me.
The thanks I should be to you, and I'm really happy. It's my pleasure being part of Story Hajj.
And especially you're doing it on the last day of Eid, so Eid Mubarak to you.
Hey, thank you very much. Eid Mubarak to you, too.
Thanks. Did you have some sort of celebration tonight?
Actually, today is the last night, so most of the celebration have been done already. And today I'm preparing myself to start my work tomorrow morning.
Ah, okay, because the work week is Sunday through Thursday.
Yes.
Well, I guess there's no other way to do it but just to jump in. Today we're mostly going to be talking about the bombing that happened last Sunday. The first thing I just want to ask, how are you and how is your family?
Okay. Actually, me and my family are doing well, safe and sound so far. Concerning the Karada bombing, of course, you're talking about.
Yes, Karada. Yeah, Karada is a neighborhood.
Yes. Yes. Maybe if you could allow me to briefly explain about the Karada district in Baghdad.
Sure, that would be great.
Yes, in order to have maybe a better understanding of the situation. Karada actually is considered as one of the most important, ancient, and well-known parts of Baghdad. Karada actually filled with markets, shops, streets, vendor, which is one of the most important, what we can say, commercial centers in Baghdad.
A commercial center, so a lot of shopping.
Commercial center, yes. Sorry for my poor English.
I know, you're doing so great.
I appreciate that. Okay then. Karada district actually is frequently crowded with hundreds of shoppers from all over Baghdad. And this is why it's have been targeted, one of the most targeted areas in Baghdad with car bombings.
So you're saying that this area has a lot of car bombings?
Yes, a lot of car bombings. If you read the history of this area, you'll find maybe there is tens of car bombings in this particular street, what we call it the Karada Dakhil, or the Karada from inside.
Do you know, in Baghdad, in the city itself, how many bombings they have per day?
Actually, I can't figure out how much, but I mean, since 2003 till now, there's a lot of car bombings happening in Karada in particular. Because usually, as I said before, there's a lot of people there, a lot of shoppers. So the terrorists, let's say, they can have a lot of people can be killed there.
Right.
And the incident can be so vast or huge.
Do you live in that area?
Yes, actually. There are only 6 kilometers between my home and the Karada.
So that's like 4 miles, right?
Yes. And there is what we have to say in Iraqi, the double deck bridge. There is only one bridge between me and the Karada.
So that's the place where you shop all the time and where your family must go there.
Yes, mostly.
I mean, how do you manage that? How does your family, you know that the incidents happen there all the time, and yet you still go there all the time to do your daily shopping. Why do you still go there instead of going somewhere else?
Yep. Actually, as we hear in the news, I mean, usually the police or the Iraqi forces keep saying that Baghdad is safe now, surrounded with the Iraqis army. So we have no choice just to go out. You know, the life has to be continued. I mean, we can't stay at home for always.
Right.
Yep. So, I mean, this is the nearest place for us. I mean, even in Baghdad, we can't go for far distance.
Right.
So we usually prefer to go to Karada, since it's just 6 kilometers, than to go to, let's say, another famous place, which is Al Mansour.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So Karada is the best place for us to go. And since there is a lot of shops there and markets, we can purchase whatever we like.
Right.
Yep.
And it's also a place where you go for just to be outside and to be with your family, right? Because I know that people like to go, especially in the evenings, in the summertime, because it's so hot in the daytime. So they go outside at night and they enjoy their ice cream or their tea and coffee. And it's like the whole city is awake at nighttime.
Correct. It's Karada, we can say it is the heart of Baghdad. There's a lot of coffee shops. There's a lot of restaurants, ice cream shops. So there is, I mean, thousands of people usually in Karada. This place or this district never sleep.
And that's why there was children out that night.
Yep. Children and I mean, complete families have been gone in that bombing.
Right. Gosh, it's just so much for me to think about. Where were you when it happened? Where was your family?
Yes. Actually, for me personally, I wasn't home writing some kind of reports. My family, which is my wife and my daughter and her 5 sisters, have been in Karada in that time. And in particular, at the same shopping center, which they call it a Laith shopping center. And luckily and gladly, they decided to leave the shopping center 30 minutes before the explosion happened.
Wow, how long had they been there?
Actually, they have been there, I mean, for almost 6 hours, shopping there and
walking around. Wow, so they spent 6 hours there, and then they happened to leave just before the incident. How old is your daughter?
Actually, my daughter currently is 1 year and 3 months only.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Okay, so they had come home?
Yep, because you know the explosion actually happens at 1 a.m. morning.
Right.
So, you know, for in Baghdad, to keep your family outside, I mean, after the midnight, which is not really, I mean, recommended.
Right.
So they have to come back, I mean, at least before the midnight.
Okay.
So they were already late.
Okay.
So when they get back at 12:30 a.m. or the 30 minutes after the midnight...
Yes.
After 30 minutes, exactly, the explosion happens.
And could you hear it?
Yes, actually, from my home. And as I told you, since there is 6 kilometers only, actually, I heard the sound of explosion. But honestly, it's not so clear because we have a, what we call a public electricity generator just next to our door.
Uh-huh.
Yes, so I thought maybe it's some kind of fireworks.
Right.
That people use to fire before the celebration of Eid.
Right.
Yes, I didn't know that there is an explosion only after 20 minutes when I start seeing that there is a lot of pictures being posted on Facebook.
Okay.
On the fire of the explosion.
Okay, so then how long did it take before you realized how serious it was?
Actually, not more than 20 minutes.
Okay, so when those pictures started to come in, you realized like this wasn't the same size bombing, because a lot of the bombings in Baghdad are quite small, right?
Yep. And actually, till now, people are still arguing that maybe the explosion wasn't that big, but the materials have been used in that explosion made it that big.
What does that mean? Can you explain that a little bit better?
I mean, the sound of the explosion, it was only one car bomb.
Right.
But the police say that they use a C4.
Okay.
You know, the C4, it's I don't know what you call it. This is some kind of material. It can burn a large location in a second.
Okay. And also, yes, so like once the building caught on fire, it also spread quickly because of the things inside the building that probably exploded, like kitchen stuff and all those, you know, all those restaurants had gas and everything.
Yeah, actually, one of the most famous shops in that particular shopping center, they are selling perfumes.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, the perfumes, when there is any fire in the building, they will make it bigger and bigger.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Okay, so then did you stay awake all night watching it, or do you go to sleep? I mean, what was your first reaction?
Yes, actually, at the second day, since it was a working day, I was planning for a visit to Anbar for Habaniya Tourist City, what we call the HTC.
Yes.
Even though I couldn't sleep in that time, because I was looking at the news, and there is a pictures of the bodies who've been burned, and even their relatives can't really identify their sons or daughters or families. So it was really horrible, and it's not easy to sleep after that.
Right. I mean, did you start calling all your friends to make sure that they were okay?
Yes, actually, I called two of my friends that they might be also shopping there. And luckily, both of them, actually, they already went back home at 11 o'clock. So it's 2 hours before the explosion.
Man, so then for your wife, how has your wife been coping with it? You know, knowing that she was just there with your daughter and...
Yeah, actually, at the beginning, she was some kind of shocked. I mean, keep thinking that we were there just 30 minutes ago. And actually, one of my sisters-in-law, I mean, my wife's sister, was asking the rest of the group to stay longer since everyone is out and the weather is cool, so they can maybe eat and celebrate till morning.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, I don't know why the group suddenly decided just to leave and to get back.
Wow. We
have to thank the God for that. That's it.
Yeah. I'm so thankful.
Yeah.
So then, like, is this something that you think about every day now? Is it, because it's been on my brain every day. When you go to work, or do you keep thinking about it? Does it pop in your head all day?
Yes, actually. I mean, honestly, Iraq is not a safe country, or Baghdad in particular is not safe at all. Even tomorrow, I think the government announced it is a public holiday.
Okay.
To continue celebrating the Eid, even the Eid is finished already.
Okay.
And I heard that what we call it is a curfew that might be start tomorrow morning.
Okay, so a curfew though would mean you'd have to stay inside?
Yes, the curfew, we having to stay inside, but I mean, there might be problems occur tomorrow. We don't know what's happened. People are angry.
Yeah.
Yes, so anything could be possible.
So that means that the government is encouraging you to stay home.
Yes.
Right? That's basically what it is?
Yep, that's why they call for a public holiday.
Okay.
Yes.
And then...
Yeah,
it's just so much. Thank you again.
Yep. The thanks should be to you, Jennifer.
So then... Okay, the explosion happened just before the end of Ramadan, and the Eid that you said today is the last day, it's Eid al-Fitr. I'm not very good at saying my Arabic.
Yep. Yeah.
But maybe, because some of my listeners don't really know what Ramadan is, could you explain what it is? And then even if you have an idea of why you think there's more attacks during this time?
Okay, of course. Actually, Ramadan is the ninth month of the Islamic lunar calendar. Every day during this month, Muslims around the world spend the daylight hours in a complete fast. During the blessed month of Ramadan, Muslims all over the world, abstain from all food, drink, and some other physical activities or needs during the daylight, such as smoking, sex, and so on.
Right, and when you say drinks, you mean no water at all?
Yes, no water, no any other drink, no soft drinks, nothing.
Yeah.
Yes, so the daylight only. So let's say it's from the time of the sunset. Let's say from maybe 4 a.m. morning.
Okay, till the sunrise. So that's the sunrise. So when the sun comes up, that's when you have to stop.
Yes. Actually, before the sunrise in a while, maybe in an hour or 2 hours.
2 hours before sunrise?
Yes. So, for example, the sunrise, if let's say 5:30 a.m. morning, we have to stop eating from the 3:30 a.m. morning.
Oh, I didn't know that. Why do you have that 2 hour buffer?
Yes. So we have to wake up because we have one of the prayers called the morning prayers or al-fajr prayers, which is before the sunrise, maybe 2 hours before. So we have to eat what we call it, some kind of a meal to prepare for the fasting.
Okay.
Yeah. So once the call of the prayer is on, okay, we have to stop, eat, and drink anything.
Okay. So it's based on that first prayer.
Yes. Yes. Because in Islam, we have five prayers. The second last prayer is the Maghrib prayer.
And what does that mean?
The Maghrib prayer, it's when we have a sunrise and we have the sunset, right?
Okay, the Maghrib is the sunset.
Yes, when now we are welcoming the night, let's say.
Okay, I like that, yep, welcoming the night.
Yes, so we have to break our fast in that time.
During Ramadan, that's also why most people are awake at nighttime, because that's when they can do all the eating and drinking and everything.
Yes.
And that, yeah, like for work, that means that because the whole country is fasting, that, yep, work hours are usually shortened, or even some places might not work at all during the month of Ramadan.
Yes, actually, some people, decided to have, let's say, a public holiday for the whole month. And usually it's shortened. Yeah, of course, we have to work for less, for 1 hour less.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Also, there is no lunchtime. Right. So we can, if let's say we work until 4:30, we have to leave the work now in Ramadan in 2:30.
Right. But those work hours must be very difficult.
Of course, especially since, you know, Iraq is a very hot country.
Yeah.
Staying without water for 8 or 9 hours, this is really difficult.
Yeah, I remember, when I first arrived in Iraq during this first summer, I had some staff who, passed out. They fainted in my office.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because they hadn't been drinking and it was so hot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, it's really challenging. Yes.
It's so challenging. And then, since this is such a holy month for Muslims,
yep,
and it's a time of really reflection, right? A lot, yep, of praying and connecting with God, then why do you think some groups like ISIS, that they do more attacks during this time?
You know, what was the reason for ISIS to do that is to, what we call it, to achieve the biggest losses in Iraq.
The biggest losses?
Biggest losses, yeah, what we call it, the casualties.
Casualties, yes.
Casualties, yes. So this is their goal, this is their aim or their objective. So in Ramadan, especially at night, people keep celebrating. And as we both agree, they want to sleep at night because they have to wait to eat their meal before the morning.
Right.
Yep. So this is the best time maybe to prepare for such bomb.
Yeah, and I think that's true for Iraq, but we know that there was attacks in a lot of other places in the world, by ISIS in Orlando, which is here in Florida, and in Istanbul, and even in Bangladesh. And so according to the news, they're saying that ISIS was behind all of this, and because it was the month of Ramadan. So so do you have any thoughts about that?
Actually, maybe they are, you know, because they are calling themselves as Muslims. Usually, if you read the history, Ramadan was the month of most of the Islam battles.
Okay.
They open, there is a lot of places have been opened or occupied during this month. So it's the month of what we call, of should be a month of energy.
Okay.
And a month of achieving results or achieving victory.
And that's from like 600 AD, way back in the past when Muhammad was just introducing Islam to the world.
Yes. Yes, the Prophet Muhammad and the people came after him.
Okay.
Yes, and they might believe that, I mean, to be killed for themselves, to be killed in this month, they might get maybe get a better place in paradise.
Okay, so if you're a martyr during this time,
yes,
then the reward is bigger.
Yep, that's correct.
But you, I mean, most Muslims would say that ISIS has it all wrong.
Of course, I mean, honestly, we don't believe in ISIS. We don't know whether those people are real or not. We don't know who are they. They usually cover their faces. They claim that they are Muslims and they are killing Muslims. I mean, something wrong is happening.
Right.
Yep.
Well, how did it affect Eid in the city? I mean, I can't really imagine people. Most people are in mourning. They're grieving instead of celebrating.
Yes, I mean, certainly. There was actually no celebration of the Eid this year at all.
Right.
Most of the streets were closed, and most of the areas of Baghdad were empty of people in fear of maybe similar explosions or perhaps some sectarian reactions. Frustration, maybe, and sadness atmosphere.
Right.
I think it was dominate most of the, capital populations. And the whole Iraq, actually, not only Baghdad.
Right. I mean, I was just looking, though, at some of the statistics online from UNAMI, which is the United Nations Assistance Mission in Iraq.
Yes.
And they said that in Baghdad Governorate, which is bigger than just Baghdad City, but in the month of June, there was 236 people killed, 742 injured. And those are civilians.
Yep.
So again, we were talking earlier just a little bit about you have to live in this city and you have to go about your daily life. Do you feel afraid or are you sort of numb to it?
Yep. You know, I say it frankly, I do not feel secure in Baghdad or in Iraq at all. I mean, honestly, the government is unable to prevent the car bombs from entering the heavily populated areas. Despite the fact there are some clear accusations by the Iraqi people nowadays that the government might be responsible for the bombing itself. I mean, for these cars, or maybe they are fully aware of them without doing any deterrent actions.
That's what like the rumor is on the street.
Yes, of course. So a lot of people, especially those people who have maybe victims in this particular incident, they are blaming the government.
Right.
I
did hear that when the president went to visit the site, basically he had to leave.
Yes, he had to leave. He had been insulted. People have been shouting at him, throwing stones, shoes, and so many things on his convoy.
Yeah,
so none of the people welcomed the prime minister at all.
I mean, we've set up the context. We know it's a difficult place to live. Yeah. And you're from Baghdad, but you actually had left and you moved to Malaysia. Is that correct? Yeah,
that's correct. Yes.
When did you move to Malaysia?
Okay. Actually, I have left Iraq in 2004. And moved to Syria in the beginning. I lived in Syria for 3 years, then I left to Malaysia. I think it was around 2007. The reason of leaving the country actually was, or what we can say is a coming is a common cause for many of Iraqis, which is the chaos that happens in Iraq after 2003.
Right, from the U.S. occupation and invasion.
Yes, with complete absence of government, appearance, which makes living in Iraq is not safe dramatically. Maybe another reason is to complete my study and get maybe a job, hopefully in Europe or America, maybe to search for a better life and a future and so on.
And you left with your father, right? In your family. Yes. This was before you were married.
Yes, this is when I was a bachelor. Yes, all of my family went to Syria. Then from there, we moved to Malaysia.
And you didn't go as refugees, right? You just were migrants.
Yeah, actually, yes. I have my elder sister applied for asylum in Syria. My family later on applied from Malaysia, and currently they are waiting in Turkey for getting the asylum. For me, actually, I didn't apply. I was thinking of maybe if I could get a migration permission to work there since I in Malaysia. I already finished my master degree in management.
In management.
Yes.
So why did you come back to Iraq?
Yes, actually, due to the lack of opportunities, maybe to move to Europe or Canada, United States, without waiting for many years in order to obtain the right of humanitarian asylum. As you know, the process is taking so long. So I decided just to return back to Iraq and maybe live in my country and contribute to save what can be saved.
Right.
Yep.
You mentioned that you left in 2004, which...
Yes.
Immediately when you say 2004, I know that the U.S. Army came in 2003 and that it was chaos. So are you able to talk a little bit about what it was like between 2003 and 2004 when you left?
Yes, actually, in 2003 and 2004, the chaos just began, we can say. There is what we can say... the revolution against the U.S. Army started their operations directly after 2003.
Yeah.
Yes, what we called themselves last time, the Iraqi resistance.
Right.
Yeah, so most of the cities around Baghdad was unsafe. U.S. Army can be targeted everywhere. There might be, you might face any, sometimes mortar bombing come from nowhere. You're always hearing there is a clashes around you. We don't know between who and who.
Right. So, so what you're saying is that all in the city, wherever there was basically U.S. troops, those troops could be under attack. And that meant that the U.S. troops could also be firing back. And so just you never knew where a clash was going to be?
Yeah, actually, whenever there is an U.S. troops, they might be under fire, even if they are inside a market or inside, a condominium or whatever they are, they might be facing any fire soon. For me, I experienced such things in 2003 before I left Iraq, which was in what we call it Avamiya neighborhood.
Avamiya
neighborhood. It is one of the most famous neighborhoods in Baghdad.
Okay.
Yes. So, in 2003, I remember I was out with one of my relatives, and there is a U.S. Army convoy was in the street in that time. And suddenly, we actually, what I saw is only the beginning. After that, the complete story, what I heard from people. So in the beginning, I saw a car, what we call the minivan, Kia minivan, with a fighter.
A fighter like a guy from Baghdad?
Yes, he's an Iraqi fighter. But okay. You know, they are usually covering their faces, right. So you don't know who are they.
Exactly.
Yes. So suddenly the slide door of the minivan have been opened and an RPG-7 have been fired on the first Humvee of the convoy.
How many Humvees were in the convoy, do you know?
As I remember, it was around maybe 6, 7, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, because I can't clearly remember, because once this incident happens and the first Humvee explode.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Me and my relative, we just stay in the ground and we were looking for a place to run from the area.
So you were out, you weren't even in a car.
No, actually we were walking.
You were walking. Okay, so you're walking. Yes. You said it's a street or it's a market area?
It's a street full of markets. Okay. Like the Karada, exactly.
Okay.
Because, you know, in Baghdad, we doesn't have malls.
Right, okay.
Mall or shopping centers, yeah. Most of our shops in the street, so we have to walk and do our shopping.
Okay, so what happened? So you fall to the ground, like you're looking just to protect yourself.
Yes, because, you know, that was the main street of Abamiya, and there is many sub-streets or sub-roads. So me and my relatives directly went to one of these sub-roads and keep running inside the city.
And then, so then what did you hear later about what happened?
Yes, after that, when me and my relative were running, we keep hearing there's some shootings and some gunfires, some clashes. After we asked many people, you know, we heard actually a lot of stories. But maybe the most common stories, they say, is the same car, they went to the end of the convoy from the other side.
Oh my gosh, the van. You're saying the guy in the van, he basically backed up or turned around and then went another way.
Yep. So he turned around and he went the other way. So let's say he fight at the, what we call it, the beginning of the convoy.
Yeah.
Then they went back and they fire at the Humvee at the end of the convoy.
So that all the other cars in between are trapped.
Yes. So the rest of Humvee is kind of stuck inside in the middle.
Right.
So some people say, I hear some stories says that there are some mortars were coming in the middle of this convoy. So I think it was a planned. I mean, it's a planned incident. Yes. And also maybe we heard that some of the fighters are come out from some of the shops or the sub roads.
Okay.
And start using what we call it in, you know, they mostly Iraqi fighters, they're using Russian machine guns.
Yeah.
Not in America, yes. So they use the PKC, what we call it, and they keep firing on the rest of the Humvees.
Yeah.
The issue is, When the first Humvee got shot by the RBG, the second Humvee, probably the driver, he was so scared.
Yeah.
And he was holding what we call it, some kind of machine gun, is automatic machine guns, which is can be turned around maybe 360 degrees.
Right.
I don't know if I am explaining.
I get it. He's standing in the top of his tank or whatever
of the Humvee,
right?
So because he was so scared, he was just keep shooting
everywhere
on everything.
Yeah.
Yes. So we just hear the shooting, and I can still hear the sound of the glasses when it's breaking down from the shops when he was firing. He was so scared.
Right. Well, that's interesting. Yes. It's interesting to me that you are also able to see that he was scared, right? And that he was acting out of the adrenaline of being afraid.
Yep.
I mean, because maybe some people might just think, okay, he's just a dumb American, right?
Yes.
Who wanted to kill Iraqis. But but you are able to see that he was actually afraid.
Yes, of course, because luckily he wasn't so afraid. He might shoot at the exact car where their fighter have an RBG-7. But, you know, most of us, if we were in the same place, we might do the same. I mean, we are all human beings and...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really difficult.
It is so difficult. And conflicts are always difficult and complex and horrible. And I'm just...
It's totally horrible. That's why actually we decided to leave Iraq because of such kind of incidents.
Right. Well, yeah, I'm glad that you were able to go, but I'm also sad that you had to go.
Yep.
Right?
There is no choice, unfortunately, yeah.
Well, when did you come back?
After maybe what I have said before, after the lack of opportunities, to get maybe to Europe or to United States or any other country, in 2015, actually, I decided to get back. And to be accurate, it was on 27th of March, 2015.
27th of March, 2015. So it's just over a year that you've been back.
Yes.
And you actually came back after ISIS had declared its caliphate. And
yes, in Nineveh or Mosul.
Right.
Yep.
Well, do you regret coming back?
This is a very hard question. I mean, yeah, to be honest, absolutely. I regret the most remorse to return because the situation is getting worse every day in Iraq with complete loss of hope for the, what we can say, improvements of living conditions. I mean, to be frankly or more frank, I am trying to get a chance to leave Iraq as soon as possible.
Right.
If things continue the way they are currently.
Do you think that almost everyone you talk to is looking for a way out?
Yes, actually, many times me and my friends were always having what we call this friendly meetings, and we're always discussing how we could leave the Iraq if there is what we call the civil war starts.
Oh gosh!
So yes, so we all put this in our plan, in our consideration.
Right.
Yeah. So for me personally, I'm talking personally.
Right.
I'm thinking every day to leave this country if I get a better chance. Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, I hope the best for you, and I want your family to stay safe. But I also know that you're doing such a great job in your work.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
When you came back, you had trained in management, you said, in Malaysia. So how did you end up even working as a humanitarian?
You know, honestly, it's since I was young, it was my dream to help people. I mean, especially women, children, the rest of most vulnerable groups in society, and especially with the large displacement crisis in Iraq currently, it was somehow realizing my dream of working in this field and assist displaced people. And since I'm an Iraqi, this is my duty to help displaced people in Iraq.
That's amazing that you are fulfilling your dream. But how does it feel at the same time to go to places like the informal settlements where you work? I know that in Baghdad, because it's a city, people aren't living in camps. Or there's some camps, but there's a lot of people living in schools or mosques that were basically abandoned because they had been destroyed in that war from 2003. And so you go and you see people that are displaced maybe from Anbar, or even I think you mentioned you're working in Anbar now occasionally.
Yes.
So how does it feel when you go and you look, you see your fellow Iraqis that are suffering so much?
Yep. Actually, you know, after you describe the situation, I mean, yeah, when it's I feel a mixture of emotions between sadness and maybe happiness at the same time. I'm feeling of sadness at thousands of poor, displaced people living in the open without shelter sometimes, with complete absence of the government to help them, even though Iraq is one of the most richest countries in the world, with a budget of what we call it in Iraq, make it a funny word, the explosive budget.
Explosive budget? It's very large.
Explosive budget. I mean, exceeded $1 billion.
Wow.
So it's, yes. When you see this, the actual situation of people living in these, as you described, the settlements or informal settlements, or what we call them, settlements like camps, there is a lot of, they are facing a lot of difficulties, a lot of health challenges, such as a lot of disease, such as scabies, leishmaniasis.
Leishmaniasis is something that causes ulcers in the skin, right?
Yes, of course. It is a very dangerous skin disease. So, it's and I was happy maybe at the same time, but I'm fulfilling my dream. I'm doing my duty as an Iraqi toward the displaced people to help them overcome with this ordeal.
You mentioned also earlier that you're losing hope for Iraq and in general. And that's so disheartening because I think we always try to find something that we can be hopeful about. I'm wondering, as you witness like an increase in sectarian violence, do you also see people who are working together, like Shia and Muslims and Christians, Yazidis, or different groups that are trying to work together and to seek peace?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, maybe if I could maybe briefly, actually, not Shia and Muslims, because Shia themselves is a Muslims.
Right. I didn't mean to say Muslims.
Yeah, just to make it clear.
Yeah, thank
you. So, yes, certainly, actually, there is a strong movement for a board of Iraqi community leaders, men, women, youth in achieving peace and put an end to the sectarian fighting and tension in Iraq, despite the difficulties and challenges that we are facing currently. I do believe that peace will be achieved in Iraq, even if it took so long.
Yeah.
I hope to be alive when it achieved, to witness it, I mean, in real.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Is there something that other people can do? You know, my friends ask me all the time.
Yes.
You know, because they know I worked in Iraq. And so when they hear stories, they say, what can we do to help? What message would you give to, you know, just people who are watching from a distance?
Yes. It's one of the most hard questions that I've heard before. But, you know,
It looks like the call dropped.
Yes, I'm back finally.
Okay, so the question then was, first of all, as humanitarians, are we making a difference, do you think? It's the scale of everything is so large. So are we making even a dent? And then for Westerners, is there anything that they can do to help? Even if it's just, you know, raising awareness on social media, do you think that that's important? Does it help?
Yes. Okay. I think your question can be divided into two parts. And let's say, are we making any difference as a humanitarian community, for example, right? In opinion, yes, actually, the role of humanitarian NGOs, especially they are who they are working in Iraq. Without them, I mean there of course going to be a catastrophe maybe, and that can't be addressed without these NGOs. The humanitarian NGOs have contributed and continue to contribute to alleviate lots of the suffering of the displaced people through the provision of aid. I mean, in accordance with the standards that studied really carefully.
Right.
Maybe this is the first question that, the humanitarian NGO is doing a lot, actually, and they are still doing that. The second question, if let's say the people, or let's say the Westerners, if they can do anything to the problem of Iraq, let's say, or the conflict of Iraq.
Yeah, and by that, I mean people who will probably, they're not humanitarians. They'll never visit Iraq. They're just, you know, at home watching their kids and watching the news.
Yes. Actually, I was trying to say before we got disconnected, we know as the Iraqi people very well the size of the sympathy that we get from our brothers in humanity from all over the world. And we know very well their inability to change the country's policies. Yeah. At the local or the global levels.
Yeah.
I think that all we need, I mean, as the Iraqi people, is the world's acknowledgement of the suffering of the Iraqi people since 2003 and until this moment.
Yeah.
We want the world to know that we are not a terrorist. We does not support the terrorism.
Right.
And we are honestly seeking to achieve a fair and dignified life like any other human beings in this planet. And I think that can be done maybe through marketing or what we can say, publicized the suffering of the Iraqi people in order to gain maybe an international movement to end what is happening in Iraq as soon as possible. We need maybe what we call it a massive public relation campaign for the world to hear our voices. That's what we need. We need an advocacy campaign.
You're really good at that.
Thank you very much.
So it does make a difference if I see an article that you post on Facebook and I repost it and then my friends repost it, that makes a difference.
Of course, makes a lot of difference. Because, you know, if I could like to add, I can see sometimes some TV shows, if people are asked, where is maybe Baghdad or Iraq? Some people maybe in America or in the West, they don't even know where is Baghdad in the map.
Yeah, that's a little bit embarrassing.
Yes, so that's what I'm trying to say. If the world acknowledge the suffering of Iraq, maybe they could make a difference.
Yeah, and I wish that everyone had an opportunity to make friends so easily. I'm lucky because I was able to live there and meet so many wonderful Iraqis, and I wish that there was more ways for us to connect.
Whether actually, we are the lucky to have you in Iraq, and hopefully we could have you again.
I would really love to come back. I'm not sure when that will be, but I do hope to come
hopefully.
Back.
Hopefully. We would love that.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for being so vulnerable and sharing your story. And I think it really will make a difference because a lot of people have never heard, you know, these stories and they weren't really even aware of the bombing in Baghdad. And thank you for just being a part of this very small advocacy campaign.
Yes, actually, I would like to thank you for your concerns. I would like to thank everyone might hear us now for their concerns or for their feelings for our losses. God bless you all.
Okay, so I'm not quite sure how to follow that. But I want to again thank my friend for his time and graciousness in doing this podcast. His strength and courage are so inspiring. If you would like to leave an encouraging comment for him and his family, you can do so on the Story Hodge Facebook page. For your reference, Hodge is spelled H-A-J-J. In other words, Hotel Alpha Juliet Juliet. You can subscribe to Story Hodge on iTunes and on Google Play Music. Thank you again for listening and engaging. And as my friend said earlier, God bless you all.